Throughout the presidential campaign, many candidates have been talking about getting back to an America that existed in the past. Donald Trump's campaign slogan, "Make America Great Again." Ted Cruz says he's reigniting the promise for America. Former Democratic candidate Martin O'Malley promised to rebuild the American dream. That got The Atlantic's Derek Thompson looking back at how great the past really was. He's senior editor at The Atlantic. He's with us from New York. Hi, Derek.
Hey, Jeremy.
So you've been looking at this review this month from economist Carol Boyd Leon of the Bureau of Labor Statistics of what it was like to be an American worker 100 years ago. Not that the candidates are specifically saying that they want to go back to the way things were back then, but what was it like back then? Let's talk about work, first of all.
Well, work for men, as I said in the piece, it was more widespread, it was more dangerous, it was worse paid, and it was overall just more annoying. This was the beginning of the scientific revolution in work, where men's hours had to be cataloged extremely efficiently by their managers in order to optimize the workforce. But most interesting, I think, is just the hours were longer and the work was more dangerous. This is a time when half of men were working in farms or in factories. The fatality rate was about 30 times more dangerous than it is today. And we didn't really yet have this idea of a retirement. This was 20 years before Social Security, so the concept of retirement was rather luxurious. And people actually feared growing old because they wouldn't have any money. People wrote of the, quote, haunting fear of the winter of life. So in many ways, work was clearly worse than it is today.
Although the commutes were very good at that time.
Yes, this might be a little controversial, but I think perhaps nothing has changed in daily life or daily habits in the last century more than commutes. Consider today you have tens of millions of people. They spend an hour in their car every day of the week. In 1915, there were just 2 million cars on the roads in the entire country. Today, there are 255 million registered vehicles in the U.S. So if people didn't drive, what did they do? Well, they walked. Half of all families, of course, lived on farms, and the rest often lived close enough to their jobs to walk. Someone on horseback. I love this detail that if you looked along Main Street, you'd often see hitching rails in lieu of parallel parking spots. You could park your mule there. But it was also a golden age of streetcars, if you're nostalgic for streetcars. In fact, the L.A. Dodgers, the most expensive baseball team today, used to be the Brooklyn Dodgers, named after trolley dodgers. Huh. Trolley dodging was a habit.
Amazingly, actually, I think some of us live in cities where the same transit system, at least parts of it, exist now. As did back in 1915. I'm looking at you, Boston. But we also, that you talk about the way people were eating. I guess we're eating less lard now than we used to.
A lot less lard. Yeah, the first thing to say is that food was just more expensive. The typical family spent about twice as much money on food 100 years ago as we do today as a share of our budget. What do we eat? For breakfast, this hot new thing called cereal, cornflakes, was invented around 1915. For lunch, sandwiches. And for dinner, lard. Lard and lots of lard. We ate about as much lard as we ate of chicken 100 years ago. Today, wow. Blessedly, that ratio has widened. Didn't eat as much sugar, though. We eat a lot more sugar now than we used to.
Hmm. And what about homeowning versus renting? I see that mortgages required a down payment back then of 50%.
Yeah. Well, owning overall was quite a rarity. You didn't quite have the same sort of mortgage financing schemes that you have now. So as a result, you know, homes were expensive up front. You had to pay half of the value of the house just to buy it. But I think that one thing that people would notice if you sort of, you know, switched the flicker on your time machine and went back 100 years ago is that the houses were a lot more crowded. Loneliness, living alone was essentially a financial impossibility. So you would often have three-generation houses. You would have more children. When your parents got too old, they would come to live with you. So you had a lot more people living in smaller houses. That would make life feel a lot more crowded.
And overall, the population was younger back then, on average, than it is today.
That's right. In fact, we also didn't even have the concept of a teenager. What you would have essentially is you would have a child, in which case you were dependent on your adults. And then the second that you were old enough to work, you would be sent off to work. You would work in a factory if you were a young boy. You might sew clothes if you were a young girl. You would work in the farm, obviously, if you lived on that farm. It took the took compulsory education to create the concept of teenagers, a space between childhood and adulthood. So if you are 14 or 15 years old listening to the segment, achievement, you should be quite happy that you live in this century and not the last one.
You had to have somebody to help make the lard for dinner and then
gotta
for breakfast,
make that
of course.
Lard.
So why do politicians always use nostalgia in this way? Because this is not the first campaign that we've had people talk about getting back to the way things were when they were great.
No, it's every campaign. I think you're exactly right to frame it that way. Look, I think the American electorate suffers collectively from a chronic condition of false nostalgia. I don't want to pretend that everything is better than it's ever been. It clearly isn't. Income inequality, global warming. But I feel like lots of people are nostalgic for the way things were not. We tell ourselves that the past was easier, it was better, it was more fruitful. But then you take a close look at daily life a few decades ago, or here you take a close look at daily life exactly one century ago. And, you know, who really wants to change places with that? So I think that these sort of comparisons are quite worthy in the political season.
I just don't want to go back to a time before Derek talked to us every week on Here and Now. Derek Thompson,
Jeremy, thank you.
Senior editor at The Atlantic. Always great to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.